She's April.
And she's Molly.
And we are
the Book Besties. Also, was no one concerned that Katy Perry looks like a blow-up doll and we put her in space? Like, what would have happened?
Look, we have a gay!
I think it's realistic for this tax bracket.
Utica, 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 Utica.
I just donated those.
Oh, there goes a fire truck. And that's it. That's all we are, is the Book Besties.
Yeah, it's just us this week. Next week,
just we have us.
My husband coming on.
No secrets. No nothing.
No April Fools.
No, just us.
Yeah.
Just it's us. Weird.
Yeah. I don't understand your shirt.
Ithaca is gorgeous.
I assume it's a play on gorgeous, but what is gorgeous? I don't know what that is.
Oh, Ithaca is full of waterfalls and gorges, literally. It's like this huge, it's on the water up on one of the Finger Lakes in upstate New York. And like, So the story of this, okay, this is the first time I ever owned one of these shirts. These are a very long time thing for the area back home. I just, for those playing the home game, I just got back from Nichols. I was visiting my mom and I took the girls up to Ithaca. Piper got a prom dress on this trip. Livy got a guitar on this.
Beautiful in it.
Yeah, Livy got a guitar on this trip. And I got this shirt because only the cool girls in my high school had this shirt growing up. And I always wanted one of these shirts. And now I'm a cool girl. And I have one of these shirts.
You know, that makes me think of something. Was there anything growing up that like made you feel like, oh, those people are rich? Because for me, it was having a Rubbermaid mailbox. So like the you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
The not metal mailboxes, plastic basically. And having a white paved driveway. And I have both of those now. But as a kid, I had a metal mailbox and I had like a
stone driveway,
gravel driveway.
Yeah.
Or regular concrete. And like for me, I just always thought, oh, only rich people have that. And now it's like everybody has that. I don't know.
It's shopping at the mall growing up for me. Mm-hmm. Like, the girls that I emulated and wanted to be like or were the cool girls had name brand sneakers. They had,
I had name brand
jeans. Neither did I. Like
the only thing I had name brand was that I bought American Eagle jeans because they fit very well. But I paid for those myself.
Yeah.
The only time I went to the mall like was to eat pretzels and buy lip smackers from Claire's.
I got hand-me-downs a lot growing up. Like, I don't hate that. I loved going to the Salvation Army with my grandma. Like, that's like how I grew up. I actually taught the girls the joys of thrifting because we live in the greater DC area. And let me tell you what, they send the rich people stuff on the outskirts of the Goodwills. I got name brand clothes for my kids at the thrift store.
That's awesome. I have a funny Sal Val story for you. So in college, I went through this phase where I was wearing like grandpa shirts, like the three buttons here and the collar. And it was
everybody goes through phases.
It was like very emo, early emo, like dress style.
Yeah.
But it was like my thing. Right. And so I had raided my grandfather's closet for some shirts he didn't want.
As one would.
Right. Have a grandfather shirt. You know what's weird? This is a side note. After I started doing this, I went to Hot Topic one day and they were selling them at a markup. And I was like, just fucking go to JCPenney and buy a fucking grandpa shirt where the fucking grandpa shop.
Right.
But anyway, I went to Salvation Army in my hometown and I found this shirt, these couple shirts, two shirts. And I was like, these are it. Like, this is prime grandpa style. I need these shirts. I brought them home and showed them to my grandmother and grandfather. And my grandpa said, I just donated those. I said, Papa, you are not allowed to donate shirts to Salvation Army anymore until I see them first. Because I just paid $3 for these two shirts that would have been free.
Damn it, Papa, give me the $3 back.
Come on, Papa, get it together.
So the summer between 8th and 9th grade, my grandma would take us thrifting. Mm-hmm. And I found this fancy hat. And I mm-hmm. thought it was like a detective hat, you know, with the brim. And it was like mm-hmm. horn, like it had a pattern and everything. I thought it was cool as shit. And I wore it mm-hmm. with everything. When I tell you I wore it with everything, I have pictures. I wore it with fucking everything. When I started wearing it to high school, boy, was I mocked. What kind of weirdo wears an old man's hat?
I don't know if fedoras were in like the late,
but it wasn't like 2000. It wasn't like the gray fedora that like Ashton was wearing. No, it was like chocolate and brown and like had a ribbon on it.
Whatevs, girl. Whatevs.
So speaking about the past, let's talk about this week's book, "The God of the Woods" by Liz Moore. This was deceiving to me.
This is a library book. Support local libraries.
I thought this was like a pink goo. And we were dealing with like a monster in the woods. I was hoping for a monster book. This was not a monster book.
I'll be perfectly honest with you. Until you drew attention to it in your questions, I didn't even fucking notice the pink.
Solid. How about a synopsis?
Would love that.
Okay. Is that because you forgot this book or because you just like my synopsis so much?
I read this book 6 full books in 1 DNF ago. So I could be garbage this episode.
Okay. So let's just clear the decks, shall we?
Sure.
It is August 1975 and we are in the Adirondacks. We are in the Adirondacks on Lake Joan, which isn't a real lake, by the way. Not that I know of. And we're at a summer camp, Camp Emerson. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And a camper, Barbara Van Laar, has gone missing. You see, this camp and the surrounding properties owned by her family, actually. Yes, those Van Laars of Albany. Thank you for asking. This isn't, of course, the first time a Van Laar child has gone missing from this area. Before Barbara was even born, her brother Bear, or Peter Van Laar IV, disappeared and was never seen again. The family has tried to move on, but it haunts them still. As we follow the police in the search for Barbara, the family secrets start to come to life. Are either the Van Laar children still alive? The longer we look into the woods, the less likely it seems. So put mm-hmm. on your boots and let's head into the woods and see if we can find the Van Laar kids.
I definitely thought this was going to be more of like murdery.
I did too.
There's like a sub story of a serial killer, but
right. It's to throw you off. But it kind of feels
it's not even like it's a red herring because a red herring would be directing towards somebody else. I don't fucking know.
I don't either.
I thought we were going to be reading something that was similar to What Lies in the Woods.
Yeah.
This was not it.
This is our first Liz Moore. She is known for twisty, dark stories. Do you like her writing? Yes. Do you like her writing in God of the Woods?
I don't know. Here's the thing. I actually thought the writing was really solid. And that was one of the things I texted you because I started the audiobook before you did. And I was like, the writing is really solid. I don't like historical fiction. I say that all the time. So that is already going to be a problem for me, but
it's already starting at a -1 for her.
But I don't even feel like the historical fiction was like that big of a part of it. It was more like rich people, rich problems, rich mystery. I don't care. But I don't think the writing was bad. I mean, I don't think the writing was bad. It's more, I don't know. I got far enough into the book before I figured out what happened. And at that point I was like, I don't know if I care anymore.
We'll get into
it. It was better than Ministry of Time though.
Facts. We'll get into the nuts and bolts of this, mm-hmm. but I didn't have issues with her writing. Mm-hmm. It was more of the fact that as I went along and as she was placing the storyline, it felt like she was going to do one thing and she was writing for one thing, right? Mm-hmm. And then it's like she changed her path.
Yeah.
Halfway through the book. Like, she's like, oh, you know what's a better idea?
Like, the writing wasn't bad, but the story wasn't good. Does that make sense?
Yes.
And I'm somebody that grew up going to summer camp. We had a summer camp in my hometown, out in the country. And I went for free on a campership because, you know, poor.
Nice.
Like
we were talking about.
And I went every summer from the time I was 8, which was the first year you could go. And the last summer I went, I was actually 17 and I was a counselor. So there were parts of this that, like, I related hard to because I felt like, oh, back at camp, like them sitting around telling ghost stories that are, like, local to that camp, like, that felt real.
Yeah.
But all of these kids at this camp are very wealthy. Like, it's supposed to be a survival camp for wealthy people. Wealthy people don't need to survive. Do you know what they do to survive? They go to fucking space for 10 minutes and they're like, hey, look at me. I'm awesome. I'm an astronaut. Also, was no one concerned that Katy Perry looks like a blow-up doll and we put her in space? Like, what would have happened? I mean...
Oh, honey.
Half of her is fake. I mean, these are fake. This is fake. All of it's fake.
Like, it's all fillers and plastic, and I'm pretty sure those eyes aren't real. Like, she
looks like a blow-up doll. Like, legitimately.
Her and Elon Musk probably came from the same bot factory.
I don't think that's true. He's cut from a bot that he's brand new.
They sent him from outer space. What is your first impressions of Barbara Van Laar and the Van Laar family? Did your opinion of them change at all throughout this book?
Okay, so speaking of Barbara in particular, here's the issue that I had with the way she was described. She's a punk. Like, she's got the punk aesthetic with all the, like, goth and things.
A young punk.
But she was in the wrong era for that.
Right. Right. There was a lot of missing research here for me a little bit. Yeah,
like, the...
We'll get into that.
The aesthetic that she was going for was not a thing in the decade that this book took place. I'm not saying that punks haven't always existed, but the way that she was dressing, that
using
gothic,
the phrasing,
goth look...
She was using the phrasing punk.
Yeah, and yes, and she was a lot younger than, like, I kept picturing her. Because she was only, like, 14, right?
13, 14, yeah. Yeah.
I think they she was 14, young. And I kept picturing her, like, 16, 17.
Yeah.
But she was 14. So was for 14. Me, she was just a hard character to wrap my head around because I don't feel like the intention was I need her to appear older because I'm going to make her very fiercely independent.
Yes.
But that's not the vibe I got. It just became annoying. The Van Laar family as a whole are trash.
Oh, the entitlement is
end of speech.
The entitlement is disgusting in that family. And I'm not going to lie. I thought Peter too was the murderer of Peter Four for a hot minute.
Is that the grandpa? Yeah, I did too. I did too.
I definitely thought Peter Four, but I think he's a villain
Oh, yeah, for sure.
He's a villain in his own right just because he insists on continuing this hard line of their family life, right? That's what makes him a villain at the end.
What was the mom's name?
Oh, fuck me.
No,
Alice.
Yes, Alice. Alice was essentially like the token 50s rich people wife. And she was going to do nothing with her life. She just needed to get married and follow the plan. And I know this is a spoiler for the end, and I have no idea if you have a question about this, but
we'll get to it.
The fact that her sister was fucking her husband, Peter Van Laar III, before they even got together, she introduced Alice to Peter, and they were fucking even then.
She knew what she was setting her sister up for failure. She really was. She didn't think anything of her sister. She honestly probably just wanted access to Peter.
It was so gross And there's like with that scene when Alice walks in and sees the two of them together sleeping, and she realizes that that is a look of love that he's never given to her.
Yeah, that was rough.
Gross.
What bugged me about all that is how they kept drugging her. I'm sure we talk about this.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure you have that in your notes. But okay.
Let's. I'm just going to keep going, and we'll jump back into it.
He started that by not drugging her, but telling her she needed to drink before parties so she would be better
able relax. To like socialize. Here's what bothers me about it is a lot of women during that time frame, a lot of women would go to the doctor and complain about whatever, and they would just put them on these happy drugs, these drugs to silence them. This was happening a lot back then. It happened to my grandma Arvina. To the point, it was her addiction, right?
Yeah.
And I'm pretty sure that's what led to her death, right? Because she was just on those drugs for so long and her heart just couldn't handle it.
Yeah. And I'm sorry to hear that, but it's not just, this is something that's happened to women throughout history, right? I mean, we talk about
give her something
this-
to shut her up.
We talk about this all the time. I mean.
Okay. We have multiple POVs throughout this book. Some that feel relatable and some that don't. Did you like this aspect of the novel, getting both sides of the story? Were you a fan of how this story was told and broken down?
So I didn't mind the multiple points of view. And the multiple stories coming together, it did keep it more of a mystery and kept that interesting. I don't think that the right person from camp to tell the story was Barbara's bunkmate.
It was an unnecessary ad.
The counselor was enough.
And TJ and Judy and her
We don't get Judy or we don't get TJ's POV.
Right.
But we have the counselors and that would have been enough. We didn't need this other girl who then also goes missing. I think the whole point of her was that she sees the woman with the white hair. Who is the wife of the guy who was accused of killing Bear.
The whole point of, what was it? Helen? Was that her name?
Yeah, I think so.
Tracy. Tracy was
the talking about the wife. Yeah. Tracy. Yeah.
Tracy. I think the point of Tracy is to show that later, this was big picture, right? Barbara was setting, she had to befriend somebody to get through this plot. She had to have some sort of companion.
Yeah.
And Tracy was just her mark. And Tracy was a girl who was sad and lonely. And that's what Barbara needed. To pull somebody aside and be like, you're going to be my secret keeper.
The most important bit of information that we get from Tracy, hands down, is when they're doing the wilderness survival. And she says that Barbara can do more things than they actually learned.
Right.
And that ends up being important. But I don't think her point of view was necessary. You could have gotten that from Judica's point of view. By interviews with the campers. I don't think we needed a whole solid POV from a camper.
I don't know if this is a question on here, but I have a bell ringer. Okay.
That's enough bells. I have a migraine.
No, I'm really irritated at this author. The audiobook narrator pronounces Judy as Utica. In upstate New York, there is a town called Utica. It is north of the Adirondacks, between the Adirondacks and Rochester. She named this woman Utica. Utica in the town of an area.
Utica, the town is spelled with a Y.
It's a U. U-T-I-C-A. Utica.
Okay, whatever. But hers was a J because she's Polish. She's not American.
Right. Well, but the audiobook the audiobook narrator says it the same way. So my head.
It's pronounced the same way.
So in my head, because I grew up there, I'm like, Utica, 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 Utica. I was spiraling half of this book. Do you hear me, Liz Moore? What the fuck? Do some research, lady. Yes, I know. Migraine. I'm sorry. The yelling's not helping.
Certainly.
Since we are talking about the many POVs, I want to talk about the timeline. We go from the 50s to August in 1975. Mm-hmm. And throughout this story, we see what seems to feel like random plot points throughout. We go into the 62 at some point. We're in 63. We go to 71. We're in 73. Like, there is so many random... Without spoilers, which we'll talk about at the end, do you feel like all this time hopping was necessary? Did it help pull the book together?
I mean, it was necessary because she was trying to tell the disappearance of two different people from the same family. It was not necessary if she would have just fucking picked one to follow.
Right. Right.
But I mean, I'm saying all this and I actually rated this book pretty highly. I mean, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, I mean, I gave it a 3.75, which is not like super high, but for me. Yeah.
I don't even remember what I gave it. I want to talk.
I've got my journal in front of me.
That helps, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
My issue was, if you are someone that DNFs books and you're bouncing around in this book this much, you might be like, when you get to the question, like, I don't remember which one it was. It was one of the random stories about one of the random families that had nothing to do with anything in this story until the very end. And I was like, what is the point of this? Why are we even here? And it just slowly just took, it just took longer than I wanted it to.
Are you talking about the counselor's story in her family?
No, it was, whose story was it? It was talking about one, it was a group of men and they were talking about.
Oh, are you talking about the guys who were originally searching for Bear?
This was before, I don't know. See, I'm so confused.
Also, I gave it a 3.5, not a 3.57.
I'm going to move on. I want to talk about the lake and the woods for a second. The cover of this book makes you think that it's something in your supernatural is going on with all the paint drippage. Later we learn it's paint from Barbara's room. How, like, did you feel the cover was deceiving?
Like, I didn't even notice the pink until you pointed it out. Also, really? I don't know why she had to paint her room. Like, that was weird to me. Like, she, her room was repainted pink because that's what her mom did. But she painted a map on her wall and she painted that, like, she loved the guy. And
like, it was this whole
setup. I kept thinking that guy was her cousin and I was very confused.
No, he was just a family friend. And because there was no male Van Lars, that friend was going to take over the bank. But he was a trashy human being who did drugs and alcohol, and Barbara wanted to throw him under the bus.
Because he was not a good dude.
He was awful.
Engaged to the counselor.
Yes.
But he was just really slumming it with her.
John Paul.
Because he had another girl who was actually another counselor. It was the main counselor's junior counselor.
Yeah, that's who Louise and Annabelle. With. Yeah, because Annabelle was 17. She was a child, the junior counselor.
Yeah, he was like all kinds of grown. Like, he wasn't even, he was like a college grad. He was like in, I don't know, he was a college grad. And
he was just fucking around.
What's the main counselor's name?
Annabelle
is the junior counselor. Louise. He at one point beat her pretty badly.
Hard.
And TJ knew about it. So anyway, I don't understand the whole painting the room nonsense.
It didn't make sense. And it really, like, there was a lot of care. I'm going to do a very... It didn't make sense to me, honestly. Like, I understand that her mom, Alice, was lost it, right? Like, Alice was fucking gone by that point. Mm-hmm. And I really think Alice was just trying to show she could maintain order.
And but I don't think that can't. Alice was just gone because of the self-medicating that she was doing. I don't think it was just that. She had an extreme trauma that happened. And yeah. She couldn't
cope. They buried that shit. Let's talk about that. Let's actually jump into this. I want to talk about the Van
Literally Lahr buried that shit.
Yeah. I'm going to talk about the Van Lahr family now. First, Bear goes missing. Peter the fourth. Then Barbara goes missing. We've talked about spoilers. Y'all know what the deal is. There is a history of the Peters all taking control and just making sure things go that the way they should, right?
Yeah.
How do you feel about the women in the Van Lahr family are treated? Does it warrant everything that happens in this book?
No. Barbara makes a comment about the fact that she wouldn't exist if her brother hadn't gone missing because Peter the third actually tells Alice, we've got our son. We don't have to have any more. There's no more kids needed. And I actually think that if Alice weren't so lost, they would have, he probably would have forced her to try for a boy again because a girl, how dare a girl inherit the bank? The audacity.
That's why they were setting up, that's why they were giving it to Sean Paul.
John Paul. Whatever.
John Paul. I was calling him Sean Paul. Sean Paul!
what is wrong with me? But I'm surprised they didn't try to have more kids. And maybe they did, and Alice was just too gone and just...
The drugs and the alcohol just ruined her body. Mm-hmm. Since we're already actually...
Well, and at that point, she knew about the affair, too.
Right. Well, let's talk about Bear for a minute. Mm-hmm. And then we'll roll into Alice, and that'll kind of... So... Bear goes missing, right?
He goes missing when he's like 8.
Right. And it's like during the Black Fly weekend where like all of the people are there and oh, there goes a fire truck. Fucking ADHD, man. The ADHD. So Bear is deemed missing from a hike with Grandpa and they get people around.
He supposedly turned back to get his pocket knife.
Yeah.
And he never made it back because there was a storm.
Right. So then it's the men go looking for him. They can't find him. Then they call the fire department. That's right, folks. The fire department. And the fire department can't find him. So then Peter the Third's like, I'll call the sheriff tomorrow. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. My child's missing.
They actually waited way too long to even call.
Yeah.
Was it the fire department? I don't know. But
fire department was day two.
They were local, like a surveyors, trackers, or whatever. Yeah. Like they did that kind of stuff. Like they knew the land really well. Because here's the other thing about the Van Lahr family. This land is like not indigenous. Theirs. It's not theirs. And I'm not talking about how we talk about all of America was indigenous and we stole it. I'm talking about like this land actually belonged to people and they like literally decided, nope, that's mine now. And built a camp on it.
Yep. But and took it over.
But there's no, absolutely no way in hell that if your kid is missing that you don't immediately call for help.
The lack of urgency in the Van Lahrs is disgusting because
that's what
money
made
will
me
take
think,
care of this.
Yeah, that's what made me think that Grandpa killed him. The lack of urgency. That like they didn't want that to be discovered.
My first instinct was like, oh God, SA. Oh God, he did something to this boy and then killed him.
I mean, I guess my brain did go there, like, because he did mention being afraid of him or not liking him.
Yeah.
I just kind of thought that there was some deep, like, dark rich people nastiness and those couldn't come to light. But in reality, they didn't want anyone to know that their son had died because that would be drama for them.
Right. Because what had happened was he had promised his mom he would go on the boat with her. Well,
yeah, but Alice the storm was really bad.
And Alice was drinking.
Drunk.
Because her husband says that she has to drink to be fun. Because if she doesn't drink, she's not fun, and nobody wants to be around her.
Well, because they got married when she was still a child. She was 17, he was like 26 or something like that.
She's not a person yet. You know what I mean? Like, she didn't know who she was yet.
She had a baby before she was even 18, I think. Or maybe she was just 18 and had Bear.
She was just 18. But.
Gross.
The baby drowns. He's not a baby. He's like 8 years old. Bear drowns. Grandpa eventually finds him. They convince the guy that owns the camp or runs the camp to hide Bear's body. TJ figures it out. This rolls into my next question perfectly. Let's take a hard look at Alice. She, like many housewives during this time, are just prescribed a medicine that that's pretty much just knocks her out. As we follow her story, we see that even in the end, she has no choice. What do you think about Alice? Was she a victim or just given a poor hand in life? Or maybe she should have stood up for herself. What do you think?
I think that's a really hard question to answer because I think she's a victim of the circumstances of that wealthy class during that time period. But I also think that at some point you need to take some fucking responsibility for yourself. I think she was too attached to her son. And I know that's a weird thing to say because I spend every evening snuggling with Sam and that's pretty much attached, you know?
Hot kettle. Hi.
But what I mean is that her attachment was really unhealthy. Like,
it was this is my baby. This is my toy.
But I think it was because she wasn't getting affection from her husband. And she really wasn't like her parents didn't really care about her. Her sister was fucking her husband.
It was a commodity.
And she didn't have friends. Like, the only thing she had was this baby. And
they kept taking it away from her.
I know. She wanted to raise him and Peter wanted him to have a nanny because that's what rich people do. When she has Barbara, she mentions wanting to breastfeed, but they give her stuff to dry up her milk. And she's like, I never got to breastfeed Bear because rich people don't do that.
No. That, why not? So weird.
And it's like, so in some ways I feel bad for her because I feel like she's a victim of, you know, that social class in that time. But at the same point, like, at some point you need to put on your big girl pants and grow the fuck up.
Yeah. But also,
she's responsible for her son's death.
She
was drunk, wanted to go on the boat in a storm. And because he loved his mom, he did it.
Oh, he would do anything for her.
And he got trapped under the boat and she was too drunk to help him.
Yeah.
She was too drunk to even realize that he was trapped.
Yeah.
She's responsible for his death.
Yeah. And they covered it up.
Uh-huh. And then she has multiple psychoses where she keeps seeing him.
Because of the drugs. And they send her away at some point. Like, it's a fucking mess.
Well, they send her away, and that was probably wise. She goes to a mental health facility.
Yeah.
And when she's there, that's really when she, like, shuts in on herself. Like, it's, she's no longer trying. She's no longer trying to be this ideal wife. Her sister comes to see her, and when her sister's there, like, she basically tells her about how she's been fucking Peter since before she even introduced the two of them. Like,
yeah.
Listen, you don't come to the mental health hospital and tell your sister that you're fucking her husband. Like, that's not the time and place for that. There's never a good time and place for telling someone you're fucking their husband, but
not
the mental hospital is definitely not the place.
Not when they're on a 72-hour hold, no friend. What really got to me about that whole thing, and I lost it. God damn it.
Sorry.
Every episode. No, it's not your fault, dude. This person. Every fucking episode. So the female voices in this novel are strong for the times, but limited by their rights because of the times. We have Judy, our detective, our first female detective in upstate New York. Louise, our counselor, and our young camper, Tracy. All three of their lives have been dictated and directed by their family and their choices of their fathers. Judy struggles to find independence from her family as she's starting her new job. TJ just wants to live a simple life.
Yeah.
Louise is just trying to figure out how to survive in the world, and try to figure out how to live in the world. And Tracy just wants to make friends. Did we need all of their POVs?
I don't think we needed Tracy's, but I want to just talk about this for a second because we don't actually get TJ's point of view.
No.
And if we would have, she would have been an incredibly unreliable narrator because she knows all the, she knows all the shit and she doesn't put it out there.
I feel like, I wonder if there's pages of TJ talking and she was just too truthful and she kept her off the book.
That's possible. But what I like that Liz Moore did with TJ's character is she made her a lesbian. And that's not the reason that I don't, we've talked about this before. If you're going to put a gay person in your book, please actually give it a purpose. It's not just gay for the sake of having diversity.
Look, we have a gay.
I have a gay. I'm inclusive. TJ being a lesbian is very important to the story because Alice makes a comment about, well, whoever heard of a woman being a caretaker of a camp? Okay.
Yeah.
Then when Barbara goes missing, all of the men are quick to be like, that woman is not a normal woman. There's something wrong with her. She's not married. She's single. Like, she wears her hair short. Like, she dresses like a man. Like that's not a woman. And so that being the case, there's suspicion on her that she maybe hurt Barbara.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
When in actuality, she was fucking raising Barbara. But But what I like is there's a chapter in which Louise or Louisa or whatever her name is at TJ's cabin after her boyfriend has beaten her up.
Beat the fuck out of her.
Mm-hmm. And she starts having like urges or stirrings and maybe like an attraction to TJ. And I think it's really interesting because TJ's like, that's not happening. You are my subordinate. I am your boss. This is not happening. And what I love about this is TJ is the person they want to point the finger at because she's different.
Different.
And she's the only one who was respectable and respecting of everyone.
What's wild is,
I thought that was a really interesting take on that.
And we get different points of view of her father, too, from the past. He's not well in present time in 1975. But in the past, one of his big things was making sure he kept the camp for TJ. Because she could control her life then. He knew she was different. He knew that she wasn't going to be a normal woman. And he knew that she needed this. And so he was going to do whatever he could to keep her safe. And that was not common in that time.
Right. And yes, because he was very accepting of his daughter.
Yes.
And we actually learn much, much later in the book that half the camp actually belongs to him. But the executor of Peter Van Laar, Peter Van Laar I's will was Peter Van Laar II, who was the other recipient of everything. And so he basically fucks the guy over and he's like, no, you can be the caretaker, but it's actually half his. Like, he should be wealthy.
He should be, but he's not.
So
do you think they highlighted how hard these times are for the women? Well,
yes, I think they did. In very different ways. Alice's story is that of the wealthy woman that is her lot in life is to make the babies for the rich man. Right. TJ is a lesbian and, you know, so she has, you know, a lot against her in that society. And then you've got Louise, who is growing up or grew up very poor, and she finally finds somebody that might be able to bring her out of that life. And instead he's a complete fucking asshole.
And her childhood wasn't awesome either.
No, it was really bad. And then you've got Utica, Judy, who is being harassed because she's a woman. And she's the only cop that actually is doing a good job.
She's the only one paying attention. Well, the guy who's like training her, he's like, report to me. Don't tell them.
Because, but he did it because he knew she was right. Like, he was actually on her side. I mean, he still was like, oh, wow, you're pretty good for a woman. But What I also liked was the dynamic of her parents were immigrants, mm-hmm. and they were very much like, you cannot live on your own. Like, you can't stay in a motel. What are you doing?
I will say this. That is really common for upstate New York. We mm-hmm. have a lot of Polish immigrants up there. There's
and Russian, that's what these were.
Russian immigrants. There's a lot of Slovakian and, like, mm-hmm. Northern Maybe Europe. Maybe
they were Slovakian. I don't know, something like that.
I think they were Polish, too. But it's that was very true for the area. Mm-hmm. As someone that grew up in that area, that was true.
They, but, I mean, that's still true if you want to talk about Texas.
Yeah.
Latino girls are not supposed to live on their own.
Nope.
Mm-hmm. They're not supposed to. You go from dad's house to husband's house. You do not yeah. live on your own. Yeah. And so I thought that I actually think that she did a really good job representing the different ways that women were treated and behaved in this time. It's probably what the best thing about this book was, to be honest, because I don't really think the mystery was that good. I don't care.
I think she highlighted the times and how poor our rights were then. Mm-hmm. I think she did an excellent job in that.
I only found one character in the whole book to be likable, and that was TJ. She was the only one I liked. And I kind of was rooting still for Barbara. She still kept that secret. Like, she yep. knew that a person she cared about, that she was friends with, died, and they covered it up. They made her dad cover it up. Oh, gosh, that's so terrible.
Oh, yeah. I mean, she learned the hard way what happened to Bear. And her dad was like, you have to keep the secret. So when Barbara mm-hmm. came along, of course, TJ was like, well, I have to keep that baby safe. Mm-hmm. If I don't keep that baby safe, nobody else will.
Yeah.
You know what? Perfect to my next question, but go ahead.
Yeah, cool. I was just going to say, she like actually babysat Barbara. Like, they took her on trips.
And they would bring her to
Alice Albany. Didn't really remember, but she went to, yeah, Albany.
They would bring her to Albany.
Yeah.
So this is actually perfect. Mm-hmm. Protect the family name. Be mm-hmm. in the Van Lars or any other wealthy family on the property seems to be the highest priority. Mm-hmm. In this book, protect the highest priority in this book. It's higher than justice or the truth. Mm-hmm. Was this realistic?
Yes. I don't just mean for this time. I think it's realistic for this tax bracket.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. 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 Like, it's protecting the name, protecting the honor, being pristine. Mm-hmm. That's more important than anything else, right?
I mean, you can look at politicians, for example. I don't want to get into politics, but what I want to say is, like, Hunter Biden, right?
So, yep. So that's the first thing that came to mind.
Very problematic. First thing that came to mind. And, you know, Joe tried to cover everything up. Because he's in the public eye. It's the same thing for these people. I mean, they're bankers, but rich people in the 50s in New York and 60s and 70s, even really even today, rich people in New York are known. People know the rich people in New York City. Now, they weren't from New York City. They were in Albany, which was like a whole big thing. Like, oh, gosh.
But they go to New York City. Yeah. When we finally, in the audiobook, to the last 2 hours of this book, things start to weave together. Finally, mm-hmm. we learn the horrific truth about Bear. Mm-hmm. Were you surprised, or was this expected for you?
I knew he was dead. I just didn't know what happened. It was surprising to me how he died. It was also surprising to me that TJ's dad was the one that had to bury him.
That broke my heart. And I think that's why he had that stroke.
Him crying, having to carry that child and bury him. That cruel. Is
because it's
practically nobody else cried over Bear. Nobody else cried over the dead kid.
It was his great nephew in all circumstances. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So Judy, this is one of my last questions. Judy seems to be the only cop who figure out what happens to Barbara. Did you figure it out too? Were you happy with the ending? Are you glad Judy left her alone?
I am glad she was alive, but I did not figure out that she was going to be living on the island that basically TJ's family owns.
Island of Misfit Toys, yeah.
It made so much sense why she knew how to do much more than the normal survival stuff, because TJ made a way for her to be safe until she turned 18.
Yeah.
Like, you can live here and survive. I think, sorry, go ahead.
No, you'll finish.
I think Judy going there and then it sort of reminded me of that TikTok, "What's your name? Well, fuck you!
Fuck you!"
Because she's like, "Are you okay?" And she's like, "I'm fine. Are you okay?" "Yeah, I'm good." "Okay, I'm just going to swim back." Like, also, who swims from the shore to the island? No, but what are you doing? She had to stop on, and float. Judy. She's not even a good swimmer. What are you doing? What are you doing?
Come on.
You're about to be the accident.
When we were on the day where they like the survival day for all the campers, you know how those kids were so mm-hmm. excited about that. Mm-hmm. When we were on the survival day and Barbara took over and she was like telling everybody what to do and selecting and directing. And now Barbara wasn't a leader. She mm-hmm. was just a kid that knew what to do. And mm-hmm. the moment she cut her own leg and made herself bleed really hard, I was like, and she didn't panic. She didn't freak out. She was just like, oh mm-hmm. shit. Like, I was like, she's up to something.
She didn't. I don't think she cut herself on purpose.
No, I don't either.
I got the impression that they decided to use her clothes for this because it was convenient.
Yes, but I don't think she cut it on purpose either. But her calm during this situation, mm-hmm. like her reacting to being like, oh shit. Like most 13-year-old, 14-year-old girls are going to be like, oh my God, what the fuck? Oh no, I'm going to die. Ah, help, right? She was just very calm and relaxed. And I was like, this girl's up to something. There mm-hmm. is no way this kid is this calm about hurting herself this bad and not up to something. Mm-hmm. And we got that story after she had already left. So it was like cookie crumbs. Mm-hmm. Cookie crumbs. Okay. Final thoughts. April Goodreads. Did I miss anything?
I gave it a 3.5. I couldn't tell you what my final thoughts are because I really am surprised I remembered as much as I did. And also, I don't know if you forgot anything because I don't know how I've remembered what I did. That was pretty amazing. I'm pretty proud of myself.
I'm pretty proud too, because I finished a book and a half already.
I have read since then Last Chance to Save the World by Beth Rivas, The Wedding People, Sunrise on the Reaping, The Butcher's Masquerade, which is a part of a Dungeon Crawler Carl series, Good Girl Complex, and A Wizard's Guide to Defensive Baking. All since I finished this book.
I finished A Wizard's Guide yesterday.
I finished it this morning. All right, so do you want to talk about what we're doing next week?
Yes, please.
So we are actually talking about this book. I do not have a physical copy. Tom put an image there. We all three read it as an audiobook, a Wizard's Guide to Defensive Baking by T. Kingfisher. And this mm-hmm. is a book that my husband, our editor, Tom, suggested, and he's coming on to host the episode. It's actually been a really light month for me because I was supposed to host, like, schedule-wise, I would have hosted yeah. the April Fool's episode and this one. So I've just had a month where I could just read whatever I wanted.
This season, I've hosted, I think, more than you.
You have, but, because, yes, you have.
But usually there's at least it's two the other way episodes. Around. But it's usually the other way around, so I don't know.
But it is, I gotta say, it's been nice to not have Annapolis this month, too.
Like, we miss you, Annapolis, but
I love the Annapolis Book Festival. I definitely want to go back there. We're sorry we couldn't go this year, but...
But I don't want to read extra this month right now.
Yeah, there's a lot going on. Just stuff. And also, I'm still dealing with the book hangover from Sunrise on the Reaping because honestly, fucking that might be one of the best books I've ever read. It was
speaking
really
of,
good.
Before we wrap up, I sent you guys a screenshot of Matt finishing Sunrise on the Reaping.
Like, just and now?
No, like a couple days ago. And he sent me like a crying face. And I go, "What's wrong?" And he goes, "Gumdrops." And I'm like, oh, honey.
That book. That fucking book.
All right, besties. We'll see you guys next time. Go read something. It'll make your heart happy or make you cry. I don't know what you're fucking reading right now. We'll see you later, potatoes. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for joining us on Book Besties. Don't forget to like and subscribe. The views discussed here are those of April and Molly and not those of anyone else. Today's book was The God of the Woods by Liz Moore. Your Book Besties are Molly Biggs and April Watkins, editing by Thomas Watkins, and music is Sleep Sweetly by Prejada. Don't forget to follow the Book Besties on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube. If you'd like to contact the Book Besties, please email us at bookbestiespod@gmail.com or visit our website, bookbestiespodcast.com. You can also support the Book Besties by joining our Patreon at Book Besties Podcast. Until next time, besties, get lost in your favorite book.